Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. On the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. The mighty trio is here. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and the famous Tom and Melissa Gould are here as well. How are you guys tonight?
All right.
Doing well. Starting off the new year with a bit of chill in the air for us. How about for you? Is it warm and balmy?
Yeah, you know, here it's I love it. In the morning, it's chilly. You know, like was in the 50s this morning, and then it gets in the 70s during the day, which is perfect. So
nice,
yeah. Very good.
Yeah, I some of the country is gonna get some cold weather. I saw, you know, but it's always that way. It is January, so
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just want to remind everybody: this show is the gathering. Which we have been doing for many, many years. And here we like to take your questions. And some of you have emailed questions to us, but you're also welcome to call with any questions or to share something. The number here is 1-888-627-6008. We're friendly here. We don't judge or criticize. We don't bite, so feel free to call us. Tom, you made a face like, do you judge?
You know, I was thinking, Bob, though, also, yeah. Because hopefully we often have new listeners. And just to say that we are explorers and by no means, I don't know, would you say we're sort of becoming experts on this, but we don't, it's all speculation. Like, none of us have traveled to the other side that we speak about, and...
Yeah. I mean, there's scientific evidence that we talk about, but when we talk about what it's like on the other side, you know, we base that on stuff that we've read and researched, but we don't...
No.
So we're all in the same boat. And as we often say, we learn as much from the listeners as they learn from us. So,
that's the truth.
So let's, I was just talking to Tom and Melissa off air, and I said, boy, you know, we did get in some questions, but it's amazing how every show we do, the questions are very similar, which tells us that this is what is on everybody's mind. So I guess let's get into it. The first question was, where do spirits live on the other side? Do they create their home? Do they sleep? We've heard that before. So let's take the last thing first. Do they sleep? They don't have bodies. So they're, you know, entities of energy and thought. So there's no reason to sleep. So I guess the answer to that was they don't sleep in the sense that we sleep. I guess you could say they might have periods where they meditate, right? So, you know, but there's no need to nourish the body because they don't have a body. And do they create their own, do they create their home?
I believe so.
I think, I don't recall if all, to answer all of that was in that book we often talk about, Testimony of Light. But I do recall the transition period from the physical world into the spirit world was compared to a newborn baby with long periods of rest and then wakefulness and adjusting. So if one would call that sleep, but then I don't believe there was mention of any further resting periods. And I believe the homes are whatever you imagine them to be, whatever you would.
Yeah, I have heard or read about that, that you can create your living environment
whatever
by thought.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it seems to be. It leads into the next question that we got before we take a caller. The question was, I'd like to hear what you believe about physical activities in the afterlife. A similar question. One medium I met said, my son, who passed last year, was enjoying fixing motorcycles and fishing. A second medium I met said that's not true because their ethereal nature is too complex for the living to understand. And she wanted to know, you know, the comments. You know, all I can say is that when it comes to physical activities and life on the other side, everything that we've read and heard and near-death experience reports and so forth, it never talks about people in spirit just sitting around, you know, like the typical sitting on a cloud, yeah, playing a harp kind of a thing. It just doesn't appear to happen that way. So we think that they're busy and we think that they're doing things. And as Tom mentioned, you know, if the entities of thought and they could create things, they create a home, they could create a motorcycle if they like motorcycles. So I don't see any reason to believe that they wouldn't, you know. And then it says, well, the medium said that it's not true because their ethereal nature is too complex for the living to understand. But maybe that's a simple oversimplification, but that doesn't mean that he can't be, you know, doing physical activities. What do you guys think?
Yeah, the comment about, I don't, it's kind of an easy out for the medium, but there is some truth to it. There's an awful lot on the other side that we cannot even comprehend because our brains are not big enough or expansive enough to understand a lot of the concepts that you will come in contact with.
Yeah. Well, let's take a caller. We have Kathy from Cleveland, who had wanted to discuss a session she had with a medium. Well, Kathy?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Yeah. Hi. I really enjoy your program. It's been very supportive. I've reached out to a medium, and it's someone that my daughter has also reached out to. And I guess some of the things that she exchanges with us are, they make sense, but then it's at some point I'm concerned that she knows too much from both of us, and it starts becoming relative to her being sort of involved with this person that's passed, and she's developing a relationship with us in a very personal way. So I wasn't quite sure if that's professionalism I should be concerned about.
Is she getting the information you're speaking about? Is she getting it from you and your daughter?
Yes, but separately. We talked to her separately.
Is it crossing the line?
I don't.
You know, kind of.
I'm sorry.
Is it crossing the line a little bit? How it makes you feel?
Sometimes, yeah, I would say so. It does make me. I guess I've spoken with her three times, and it gets a little personal where she relates to things in her life, and it gets into a conversation almost, and it seems different than what I've listened to on your show, where there's a connection that's just really clearly defined. I'm talking more about professionalism. So
I think you have a, you know, legitimate concern there. I mean, it becomes more and more of a concern, you know, in today's day and age, because information about you and me and everybody else is readily available on the internet by doing a simple search. Complicating it is you've gone to several readings with the same, you know, medium, and sometimes the medium might be kind of spitting back some of the information that you already said, either, you know, knowingly
correct.
Or unknowingly. And then the last thing is, you know, talking about her, you know, personal life, you know, that gets a little touchy there, because the medium's job is first and foremost to provide you with evidence. Mm-hmm. Now, if your loved one in spirit is communicating something, and that's how the medium relates to it through her own things that are going on in her own life or her own symbols, so to speak, that's one thing. But it sounds like you don't want to get too personally involved with a medium, because you want them to be impartial and, you know, a vessel for information coming through. Right. Tom, you agree with that?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that in the beginning, definitely she was very connected to our loved one, and there was information coming back that made sense. But as it progresses, talking to her, it's almost as if her support is almost on a psychologist level, where you just are going through your grief with her. So I'm just trying to define what that relationship is, because there's no accreditation or anything like that. So it's sort of, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty much a person-to-person experience. Everybody has their own style, and you it's finding a medium whose style you feel comfortable with, you know, on the one hand. On the other hand, it's quite understandable, especially on multiple readings, and the fact that the medium and your loved one are meeting in a vibrational space, they get emotionally connected. A medium gets to know the person as they are getting to know you. And so it does seem, it's not unusual, I'd imagine, but you're right. Professionalism, you really should keep it a little more removed, but there is, as you say, there's no accreditation or anything like that, no rule book on how to be a medium necessarily. I mean, there's plenty of classes and whatnot that people can take, but that's a tough one.
Yeah.
I have one other comment is that I've gotten a lot of light signals, which have been like Morse code. For me, from my loved one that just passed.
Mm-hmm.
They passed almost a year ago, and it was a child.
Uh-huh.
And it's as if the light actually mimics like the emotion that is happening.
Wow.
And it's really remarkable, because it's happened so, and I didn't know if you had anybody that you've spoken with in the past with this, where there was a situation where my daughter was bringing one of her children down to the emergency room, and I wasn't going to go because she didn't need me, and I went. And my light outside my garage was just vibrating like nervousness at me.
Wow.
And then there have been times when I leave her house and all the kids are saying goodbye, and then the light will go like goodbye, 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 and flash, and almost as if it's Morse code. And it's happened so much.
Yeah, Bob can share a story about that.
Okay.
Yeah. Before I do that, it gets complicated, you know, because there is psychokinesis of mind affecting matter, and emotions of a living person can affect energy related devices, you know, like lights. But on the mm-hmm. other hand, so can spirit, because spirit also does psychokinesis. So that could very well be coming from your loved one. Melissa jumped when you said Morse code, because my daughter in spirit put on about a 2-month display of Morse code that started car radios, TVs in the house, whether they were on or off, radios on or off, and even things mm-hmm. that don't make sounds, you know, like microwaves and alarm panels and things like that. And as it turned out, we just, the only way that we could describe it was Morse code, because it had a set cadence to it. There were sounds, not lights, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to go in through the whole story, but we researched it. We were working with a scientist that had was working with research mediums in a laboratory setting, and the scientist asked my wife to communicate with my deceased daughter and ask her if she was sending the Morse code, and if she was, we were told to ask my daughter if she would go to this medium. We only had her first name. We didn't know her. We didn't know anything about her. And let the medium know if it was she that was sending the Morse code. And, you know, the next day we got an email from the scientist, which was a forward of the email that he received that morning from the medium. And the medium said, I don't know what this is. I've never received anything like it before, but somebody is sending me Morse code. So that was kind of a wake up call for me, because I couldn't think of any physical explanation, you know, for that. And also, you know, with the lights.
No, I said I tried to film it, and as soon as I try to film it, it stopped.
Yeah,
and that's it. It's happened probably about 8 to 10 times in the last year.
That's fantastic.
It is really wonderful. I feel really connected in this way. So I feel really lucky. And yeah. I've had responses from both of my parents after they passed as well. And I'm an artist. I don't know if that makes any difference, but I'm very in tune with just seeing, you know, seeing things and visualizing things. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks. And artist. And keep in mind that what you're experiencing is a very common form of after-death communication. So it's real, and you're not alone.
Yes, and being an artist does make a difference. We have a scientist involved in the foundation who actually maps brainwaves of mediums when they're working, or people when they're having psychic experiences, and it's largely a right brain phenomena. So as an artist, your right brain is more attuned. And so, yes, you are in the right frame of mind, quite literally, to receive.
You're very fortunate, Kathy. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, thank you for calling.
So much. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
What you're doing with your foundation. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Stay in touch.
All right. We have Jenny from California. Hello, Jenny.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Oh, boy. I'm excited to ask my question. this is the first time I've ever communicated with someone like the three of you. My son died about a year ago. He was my only child. A few months later, I mean, I was just, of course, distraught, as any mother would be. At night, somebody came and sat at the end of my bed. And I thought, oh, my gosh, woman's coming in to rape me. And I was terrified, but no one was there. A little while later, the entity came back and sat at the end of my bed. And then they kind of disappeared. And then they came back and they laid all along behind me and pet my hair. And so I have since had physical experiences, and now I've gone to mediums, and my experience with the mediums are amazing. I mean, some are really good at knowing names. Others are just, they're kind of different. But anyway, here's the thing. One is, I'd really like to hear about, if there's a book or other avenue for me to hear other people who've had physical experiences, because I haven't identified that yet. And then the second question is, you know, I thought of myself as a Christian, and it says in the Bible that, you know, mediums are aberrations and abominations and should be put to death, and that we're opening ourselves to evil spirits and just horrible stuff. And I don't know, I guess I want to find out what you think about evil spirits being there as well.
Well, we don't think that there are evil spirits, and as we've talked about before, you know, in the past 20 some odd years, we've witnessed you know, thousands of medium readings, and not one of those has an evil spirit ever come through. But a lot of people are troubled that have strong Christian beliefs, you know, because the church says things like that. What's interesting, though, is that the Christian Christianity has a long history of paranormal things. Some even appear in the Bible, you know, and the founders of modern day religions came out of the ages of mysticism, where communicating with your ancestors was done on a regular basis. I mean, there were priests and, you know, and saints that were able to, you know, levitate. I mean, this is nothing new, but it, you know, and in my opinion, you know, it's become something of control. It's okay for them to do it, but not you, you know? So a lot of people with religious beliefs have strong fears. I know of people, and so did Tom and Melissa, that had their loved ones appear to them. They saw their loved ones, and the connection got broken quickly because they were fearful. You know, the thought popped into, oh, there's an evil spirit, and it's that real, and it's really their loved one, you know, who went to a lot of trouble to try to manifest in physical form. So I don't think, and a lot of people, as far as having this sense of presence or feeling somebody brush your hair or your face or whatever, I mean, that's, you know, that's true. I mean, there are a lot of books about that. You can go on our website and under recommended reading, and the category, you know, they're itemized by category. But I think it's perfectly, you know, it's perfectly normal and real and nothing to be feared. You guys want to join in on that?
I'm just recalling the, and thank you, Jenny. I want to thank you for sharing that. And I hope you keep embracing these feelings of contact. Hopefully they'll continue and they won't be fearful. What I'm recalling is when Tom's mom passed, and she had become involved with the organization later in life and was very interested in talking with mediums and connecting with Tom's dad, who had passed years before. And when we had to put her into a hospice setting just for the last 48 hours of her life, and were there stroking her hair, holding her hand, singing to her, and with her as she passed over, and it was just so peaceful. And Tom knew that she was greatly comforted by knowing that she was going to be with her husband again, because the mediums had told her that he was waiting for her, he was going to be dancing with her. And Tom and I were just so moved by the whole passing that was really quite beautiful. And while we waited in the hallway for transportation to the funeral parlor, we were just glowing and started to share some of our experiences with one of the hospice nurses. And she put her finger up in our faces and she said, "That's evil." And we were shocked. It was just so cold. And thinking back to her introduction to us that morning and naming her six daughters who all had biblical names, I realized, I guess she was a devout Christian and that was her indoctrination. But when I shared that with other people over all the years now with the foundation, those who are hospice workers, they've said, "Oh, that, you know, she should have been reported because that was totally inappropriate." But that, I think that's, unfortunately, you know, some people have that drilled into them over the years, which is their loss, I'm afraid.
And if you're continuing to have physical experiences and are all, you know, somewhat concerned, because again, we're not experts, we don't know the exactly how things work, but what we have seen with mediums and readings is the people who are coming through are the people who love you and want to let you know that they're fine and they're okay on the other side. So that is nothing but pure love. So there, you know, there's somebody who you loved on this earth and they go to another plane, they're not going to turn into a beast. They are going to be the loving spirit that you loved all the while. So that is not going to happen. But what you can do, and I've heard mediums say, is if you feel like you're going in a situation with a spiritual encounter, what you do is you imagine a white light coming down from above in through the top of your head, and imagine that white light, which is a loving, healing, compassionate white light, to surround you, and that will protect you from any mischievous spirits who might want to take advantage.
Yeah. Two last things before we let you go, Jenny. The it's not only religion. You know, we live in a society that, where it's ingrained in us to be fearful of things that we can't perceive by our known senses. So I don't want to make it sound like it's only religion that fosters these feelings. And two, we had a wonderful medium for many years certified by Forever Family Foundation named Janet Nohavik, who's now in spirit herself. But Janet was, for many years, was a Catholic nun. And she was also tremendously gifted mediumistically. And that, of course, was frowned upon. And she finally had to leave, you know, the Catholic Church and opened up her own spiritualist church. So I hope we've given you some things to think about.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Be well.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye. Here's one question. I've seen hummingbirds and butterflies appear at my kitchen window at specific times, and I know that that's a sign from my child. How do spirits in the afterlife manipulate living creatures to deliver a sign at the right time? Well, first, I think you've got it right, you know, that it's not your loved one that's turned into a hummingbird, but it's your loved one that is making it happen. How they make it happen, we speculate that they are able, being this energy of thought, to imprint a thought into the bird, you know, to go to your house at a specific, you know, location at time. We don't know the exact mechanics of that, but that seems to be the you know, the way it works. And the other thing that you said is that you know that it's a sign from my child. That's the important thing, because that's what's attached to the sign, you know. Otherwise, you know, some people would, like, if I saw a bird 25 years ago, I would never would think that, you know. But now, you know, you see it, and something that you can't describe just tells you that you know that this is your loved one. So I would say that, yeah, I mean, how many times have we heard that? Birds, butterflies, right?
Well, you know, we were talking earlier about how spirit can make lights flash. And, you know, lights are electricity. And so spirit, as Bob said, is pure energy. So it can direct the energy that's flowing through your wires to make lights flash. Well, if you know about any living creature who has a brain and is reacting to stimuli, it's done because there are little electric bolts going through the synapses in your body that send the messages to your brain. And so a little creature, a bird, or a squirrel or something, they have little brains, and so a spirit can just go, okay, I'm going to fire the synapses in this little bird's brain to make it want to fly over to your windowsill. So it's all related. It's basically the same process, whether they're doing it with an animal or your house lights.
Yeah, just earlier this afternoon, well, actually into the evening before dinner time, I was the sad task of dismantling our Christmas tree. And over the years, I've gotten many, many ornaments representing cardinals in the shape of cardinals and little plaques. And some people go, oh, not another cardinal. But, you know, in my family, that was significant. And it was odd because it's getting dim in our living room. The lights go on when it gets a certain darkness. So it was a pretty dim room as I'm removing these ornaments. But I'm seeing out our bay window a flash of red. And I'm like, wait, what's that? And there was all this bird activity, cardinals in the dusk outside the bay window. We don't even get that much bird activity this time of day. It's usually earlier in the morning. So it was so unusual. But I was, thinking of my loved ones are enjoying this right along with me.
Absolutely. All right. Here's one. Since my son Kyle, age 40, passed suddenly in 2020, he's been amazingly prolific in sending me all kinds of signs and synchronicities. I also believe he communicates with me as I hear his voice in my head often, saying things that I wouldn't have thought of, and other evidence. But the one thing I haven't experienced is a sighting. I've seen doppelgangers, but I have read that some people actually see their loved ones. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross writes about seeing one of her patients about a week after this patient passed away. She even had a conversation, the two of them. So I asked Kyle recently if he would show himself to me, and I instantly heard in my mind's ear, "Mom, you're a heart patient. I don't want to give you a heart attack." he was quite hilarious and still is. "I am a heart patient. That's true. I had a valve replacement, but I never had a heart attack. I think I'm ready to see him. Is there any way I can facilitate this? I've heard you can go into a darkened room with a mirror and candle and stare at the mirror for about 20 minutes. Are there other ways I can do this? I miss seeing him and would love a visual visit." There are a lot of people that see. I think we just had, a caller that saw their loved one. I see that it's not something that you can make happen. But you can certainly do some things to facilitate it. Now, what you're talking about is a psychomantium, which based on the ancient Greeks who used to have these dimly lit caves with water reflecting pools, and they used to go there and talk to their deceased loved ones and sometimes see visual images. Then in modern day times, a lot of scientists built psychomantiums. I built one after meeting with scientists in the basement of my home. Tom and Melissa have built one in a closet, in their home. And it's exactly what you say. It's a darkened room. We built it out of, mine was built out of PVC pipe with very dark curtains. And it had a reclining chair, and it had a very dim, like a night light in there. And it had, and the chair looked upon a mirror that was hanging fairly high. And all you did was gaze into the mirror. The typical session is about 40 minutes, and it's usually recommended that you have a spotter because some people can get claustrophobic, you know, being in a darkened, you know, space. And the scientific studies that were done showed that a large percentage of people had these, what we would call non-physical experiences, ranging from shooting lights to full-blown visitations, you know, from loved ones. So that's one thing that you could do. You could read about psychomantiums, and Raymond Moody, you know, was the first one to do research on that. And Arthur Hastings, who's deceased, did a 2-year university study on that. So anything else that you guys would suggest?
Well, there's also now exists, if you know, these VR goggles that you can get. There is software that you can do a VR psychomantium.
Ooh.
And apparently it only doesn't take the 45 minutes. You could do it for 15 to 20 minutes and get the same effect. And I'm getting this because I mentioned him earlier, but there's a book I'm reading now by Dr. Jeff Tarrant, T-A-R-R-A-N-T. And he is the founder of the Neuro Meditative Institute out in Oregon, I believe, or Seattle, somewhere on the West Coast. But his book called Becoming Psychic is excellent. He chapter by chapter will go into talking about psychomantium. He'll talk about meditation. He'll talk about mediumship. He'll talk about telekinesis. And in each chapter, he has a section that says, try it yourself, and he gives you a whole list of how you do these things. It's a fantastic book. I'm almost finished with it, and I'm looking forward to trying a lot of what he says. But there's a lot of very scientific stuff in the book, because he maps brain waves, and he talks about the different parts of the brain and the theta and the gamma wave and all of that sort of thing, which gets a little bit out there, but when he gets back to the nuts and bolts of try this for yourself, it's really quite good. So that's a place you could look, because not only, you know, it does talk about the psychomantium, but it talks about other ways to enhance your psychic abilities, and there's no one size fits all with this. So he gives you a lot of different options that you can try.
Did he mention the scrying that Joe Scheel has talked about?
Not specific, not by name, but something similar to that.
One other thing in that question, which is a legitimate concern that we suspect is true, is that some people in spirit are afraid, you know, that you would scared if they suddenly appeared, you know. So that is a possibility, especially if you've had, you know, some heart issues, and that could be an explanation about why some people don't receive like direct signs and communications. We don't know for sure, but I think that's a possibility.
Yeah, we have an anecdote that we have told a few times, but fits right in here. There was a woman who I believe we talking to Bob and saying that she all she wanted was to see her loved one again, and then finally one night at the end of the bed, there he was. He popped up and he was there, and we said, well, what did you do? And she goes, I screamed like bloody hell and said, don't ever do that to me again. So yeah, it's a very real concern. Your loved ones want to tell you that they love you and that they're fine and all that, and they want to give you what you're asking for, but it's the old be careful what you wish for. They know that this might not be good for your health if I suddenly appear in front of you.
You know, you're making just, I know you're ready to move on, Bob, but it just made me think that gazing at a favorite picture of your loved one and, you know, just deep in thought, and just feel like you are communicating. It would bring a comfort, I think.
I think that, you know, we could throw in here that the key is, and we were talking about left brain, right brain, and that sort of thing, and that how psychic abilities, especially communication with deceased loved ones, is all about energy and getting your vibrations raised in that. And you can't do that. Your left brain, your logical left brain, especially in today's society, which has been told that this is impossible, is thinking this is impossible. I can't do that. So what you need to do, what anyone needs to do, is turn off that little voice in your head that's telling you, chattering all day long about what you can and can't do, or what you have to do next Thursday, or who you have to call when you're done with this. All of that is blocking your ability to clear your mind. You want to clear your mind so that you get into the flow of the energy of the universe. And again, to realize that humans can't do that. They have to put their body to sleep in a way, and let your subconscious, your soul, your mind get into the flow of the universe, and that's when these things can happen.
Hey, let's go to Tim from Pittsburgh. Hi, Tim.
Hi, good evening, everyone.
Hi, Tim.
I understand you have a question about past lives.
Yeah. Just laying a foundation, we all look at evidence that mediums bring through regarding afterlife. And I've become interested in the concept of reincarnation. I've read the Ian Stevenson work and what Jim Tucker has continued in that area, and also looked at things like past life regression that Michael Newton has done. I'm just curious, sort of melding the two areas, whether you folks have ever come across evidence that mediums have brought forth evidence that somebody has lived past lives. An example of this, so sort of off the top of my head, would be somebody who has no artistic ability in this life, but had a past life regression and was told that they were an artist in a previous life. They told their family members about this, so the family members knew about this. That person then passes on. The family connects with the medium. The medium connects with them in the afterlife. And the person, the medium says something along the lines of, they're telling me that they were an artist, but it was a very long time ago. That's meaningful information to the family, that not only they make a connection with that family member, but also bringing forth information about reincarnation. I'm just curious whether you folks have ever come across stuff like that.
Yeah, well, you know, Tim, it's a question that I've had many personal conversations with mediums about this subject, because mediums almost never, you know, bring through past lives. And my question to them has always been that, how do you know, that you're not communicating with somebody's, you know, previous life when you're doing a reading? Of course, if they were giving you evidence from the previous life, the sitter wouldn't be able to validate it, because most people lose memories of, you know, they have them as a child, but once they reach the age of, like, you know, 8 or 10, those memories are gone, although some adults still remember. So mediums don't, as a general rule, tell us anything about, you know, past lives. Now, on the other hand, you mentioned past life regression, and their books, you know, like Brian Weiss and others, are filled, Michael Newton, you know, with prior lives and life between lives, and some of the stuff, you know, is evidence. The scientific community, the people like you mentioned, like Tucker and Stevenson and others, kind of frown on the past life regressions from an evidence point of view, because only because of the fact that you're in a hypnotic state during a past life regression. So you're in a very suggestive state. So they're not saying it's not true, but, you know, as far as hard science is concerned, they don't feel it's as valuable, but it's certainly compelling. And that was the hardest piece. I don't know about you, Tom, but that was always the hardest piece of the puzzle for me to wrap my head around. We know virtually 100% of the people in the spiritual community believe that we all reincarnate, you know, or, you know, some say it's a choice, but the reincarnation is real. But, you know, it's kind of a split in the mainstream thing, except for, you know, also religion comes into it, you know, with a lot of people. But I mean, the only evidence I've had is, Tim, is what you've already mentioned from reading the case studies, you know, from the research.
And there are thousands of them. When you mentioned that Jim Tucker and Stevenson, that, yeah, there's thousands of reincarnation stories. So if you're reincarnating, then you're reincarnating from a past life. So, you know, it just goes to, if that evidence is real that you're reincarnating, then it's definitely real that you've lived past lives before. And there are people who specialize in connecting those past lives, and you can do a regression again, because we're on a fine line here where we, the foundation is based on science, and we want facts, we want data, we want hard evidence before we're going to sit here and tell you that it's a real thing. And like Bob says, when you have something like this, that there's no way you can quantify what's being told to you. There's no data. You have to take it on faith. And we appreciate faith and definitely encourage you to have faith, but we can't sit here and tell you things from faith. We're going by the evidence, and that's why we come up.
But I think we have enough evidence regarding past life memories from the research to assert that, you know, that it's real. I think the question, Tom, that you're talking about is with the past life regression, right?
Right. If it's true for you, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just, again, there's really an awful lot of, I mean, this has really come to the forefront in the past 20, 30 years, especially with people being able to give, say, long distance readings and the validity of that. There's a lot more readings, and I think people are more willing to talk about these things and accept them, even in the face of the religious issues that you folks were bringing up. I was just wondering if, you know, somebody had gotten some type of evidence, whatever you want to call it, that, and I'll go back to my example, that they had been an artist in a previous life, and now their family was aware of at least that, or that information that was brought forth at one point. That person's now passed, and then they get something from a medium that says, you know, he wants me to say that he's rediscovered his artistic abilities, which he didn't have in that present life, but the family knew that he might have been an artist in a previous life. Something like that.
Exactly.
To tie in that potential information. I just think that would be really good stuff, because, you know, somebody who has no artistic ability all of a sudden makes a statement like that through the medium. The medium has no idea that this guy was artistic in a previous life, but the family knows because they've, you know, pursued this in a different way. I just think that's quite validating information. If it's
you'll hear that occasionally. but there's no way for us to, you know, to really, usually there's no way for us to validate the information. See, my question with the mediums is that maybe that's an explanation why the medium sometimes seems not to be connecting. They are connecting, but they're connecting with a previous life, and that information cannot be validated because the spitter doesn't remember it. So that was my interest in the involvement with the mediums. But, you know, I get what you're saying, Tim. If the medium were able to provide that information about a past life and it was able to be verified, that's significant, and that would be, you know, some great research. But unfortunately, it doesn't happen too often.
It is interesting to think. Oh, go ahead, Tim.
Go ahead. No, no, no. I was going to mention something else, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was simply going to say, you know, when we do hear some readings where it doesn't seem like a connection is being made, but I know we are always encouraging people to record it or write it down. But for instances, like you mentioned, once more information has been revealed about the individual, you know, maybe it would come to light. Oh, yeah. Remember in a past life that had, you know, something had been revealed. And so, you know, for mediums, when they have a sitter saying, no, none of that makes sense. Well, maybe it will prove to make sense eventually.
And, you know, the primary thrust of sitting down with a medium and your loved one coming, noticing, oh, there's a medium I can get my message through, is they want more than anything for you to know that, yes, it is me you're talking to. It is me. And the best way to do that is to feed the medium information that nobody else could know. And the fact that this artist, twice removed, is talking about that, it's from a conversation, a private conversation that they had that the medium couldn't possibly know. You look up on Facebook or wherever they're accused of looking up, Google searching somebody, it's never going to say that they were an artist. So when the medium says, he's telling me that now he can do his artwork again, then you know, aha, that's it. That's him. That's because he said that.
Yeah. Right.
Well, unfortunately, we have to move on, but thanks for calling, Tim.
Thank you, Tim.
Fascinating.
Well, and thank you, folks, for doing what you do here. It's a part of just bringing the evidence forward. I was fortunate enough to write to the Bigelow Foundation, and I got their 5-volume set.
Oh, yes, I have that.
Award winners. And I read it, about 2,300 pages or so. And if people read this stuff, they realize the evidence is really overwhelming. It's just that, you know, we don't get this when we're kids. We get bar mitzvahs and we get baptisms and confirmations. And all of that's good, not against that. But we don't really get into this until we're adults and we are curious enough to start exploring all of this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's unfortunately why, you know, spiritualism as such has not taken off as much as it might, because kids don't really hear about this enough. But at any rate, even adults don't hear about it enough. And you guys are doing good work. And I just wanted to put that out there and thank you. Well,
thank you, Tim.
Great.
Thanks for calling. Have a good rest of it. Have a happy new year. All right, we only have 2 minutes left. Just real quick before we end, we had a question that I was adopted, never knew my birth parents or family. Will any of them who are on the other side greet me when I get there? And how will I know who they are? So, I mean, real quickly, I think we're in agreement that, yes, they will be there. Mm-hmm. The connection is the connection, you know, that love provides. How they'll know when you pass, I really don't know, but it's some sort of instinctive thing where as you're passing, your loved ones are summoned. That's a bad word, but they're alerted to your imminent passing and they're there. And how will I know who they are? You'll just know.
You'll just know.
Yeah. I can't think of any other way to put it.
Right.
But we'll all find out someday, won't we?
Yeah, we will. All right, well, it's time to read Claude Swanson's Global Peace Prayer, which now is more important than ever. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
And I'd like to say our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to accept it.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.